Jon Stewart is back at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
Now hiring.
Twitter is looking to hire all the motherfuckers they fired last week,
as they have now realized that they fired some of the people that was kind of sort of essential to making the company run. Elon Musk is slowly backsliding on his plan to let go of 75% of Twitter's workforce after he's seen the shit show.
Smooth.
That website turned into.
Smooth move, X-Lax. Smooth move, X-Lax.
A Bloomberg report cited sources saying that the company asked some folks to return as they were laid off by mistake.
Oh. Wow.
The company dismissed people across multiple departments, including human rights, accessibility, machine learning, ethics.
Wow.
Like transparency, accountability, advertising, marketing, engineering, and curation. Some of these employees, as it turns out, might be critical to keeping the platform running smoothly as they implement some of Musk's new features.
They're also messing themselves up by not getting that tax credit, because when you have minorities and people with disabilities on the roll or whatever, you get a tax credit.
Well, ain't no telling who they gonna hire now in the place of all these folks, because they ain't gonna know a goddamn thing. Man, I can't wait to go back to MySpace. My name is Roy. This is my job fair. Wednesday. It is the best day of the week. If you weren't born on a Wednesday, my condolences to you. JG.
Yes. Hi.
Wishing you a happy McRib Awareness
Month. Whatever.
Birmingham.
Whatever.
We're talking museum curation today. We have a museum curator that's going to join us for the duration of the show. And talk to us a little bit about that life, because you go in a museum and we all know how most stuff get into a museum. It was stolen from your fucking people.
Right.
Never gave it back. Then they put it behind UV protected glass and show it off for $20 a head.
Talking about you, Museum of Britain.
But who is the person that goes out and decides, hey, yeah, that's dope. That should go in a museum. Let me buy that up off you. That's a very, very interesting world, because you are essentially deciding what the artifacts are. Because in a museum really ain't shit but a time capsule.
True.
With a door and a toilet. It's just a time capsule you can walk in and walk around. So I'm very curious about that world. There's certain things that are museums that I don't think should be museums. Fuck it.
Come on, man. Really?
Like what?
Am I the only person that doesn't care about, and it's not something that will continue because of modern medicine, but anytime they go, oh, this is the house where so-and-so was born, like Abe Lincoln's house where he was born, or in Tupelo, Mississippi, you can go see the house, if I'm not mistaken. Rhonda, double check that for me. I think there's like, you can visit the Elvis Presley birthplace. Like, is that really a place I need to see? Maybe I get the house where you live. Like, I get Graceland. I'll give you Neverland. I'll give you Paisley Park with Prince.
Frederick Douglass's home.
It's a wonderful
home.
That's black people.
I'm cool with the house. The house and birthplace are two distinctly different locations. You get what I'm saying?
Okay.
Like, we went to Memphis. So I remember in the first grade, we went to see Alex Haley's home. And like, this is where he wrote Roots. And this is, okay, fine.
That's what's up.
But the spot where you came out your mama's coochie. I don't know if I
need to see that. Yeah, I don't need to see that. That's different. No,
I don't know if I need to visit that place.
Especially if they do like a recreation, because you know how hard they be going nowadays and stuff. So you walk in there, somebody's screaming and crying. I don't need that kind of hologram in my life. That's a real nightmare. I don't want that.
I don't know.
I like the history.
But I do like the history. I'm with JJ.
I like the history. So we totally disagree on this one. If you did something notable or worthwhile in that particular place, I want to see it. I want to know about it. I'm probably the only black person, or one of very few, that goes to see Gone with the Wind type stuff. I love that.
I'm okay with that. I'm okay with visiting historical landmarks from movies and films. And, you know, I was raised in museums. I mean, JG, you from the South, you know how they do us. They take you to every black holy spot, Buses Ebenezer, right, Baptist, Civil Rights, Lorraine, Motel, Montgomery. Yeah. Like,
oh, Martin.
You do the black tour. But I didn't need to see the house where Martin Luther King came out as Mama Coochie and the no one needs to see that. There's just certain things that we as a society have deemed to be historic and worth visiting that I'm like, I don't know. And that's why you need curators. You need somebody who goes, nah, motherfucker, that ain't important. That's important. Come bring that to the museum building.
I like when they put offbeat stuff in museum. I will say that. I can't necessarily go with the home thing, but offbeat things. Like I know at the African-American Museum in the Smithsonian in D.C., they have the mothership, the Parliament Funkadelic mothership. And you know, that was something as a kid that I always kind of, you know, thought was just some mystical thing that didn't exist. But to be able to go and check that kind of odd stuff out, I like that kind of stuff.
I went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and they had a lot of really cool outfits. And part of me was like, I don't know, nobody care about no damn shit a motherfucker wore. And then the more you walk around the place and it's like, oh, this is the actual garment that they wore by doing the iconic thing. And like, there's like Prince Purple Rain outfit.
I was just
There's a Michael Jackson glove just on display, like the Thriller jacket, the Thriller. I'm sure there was a couple of them, but like to see that, I'm like, okay, that I appreciate.
But that means something to you. So that's why it's important to you. That's why you find it interesting. Those things mean something to you. So for those other people, things might mean something to them too.
And here you can see on the floor, if you look closely at the wood, the stain from Abe Lincoln's mama's placenta that splayed out on the wood. If you get close, give it a sniff and then meet me in the gift shop.
We have a candle.
I tell you a tour I wasn't fond of. You ever walked out on a tour?
I wanted to.
Ellis Island.
That one was heavy.
Statue of Liberty. I didn't have a good time at Ellis Island. And I think that at the time, well, to be fair, number one, I went to Ellis Island. It was one of the first things I went to when I was in New York City, when I moved here. And we were in the middle of, you know, a lot of the black uprising and a lot of Oscar so white. And, you know, there was just a lot of black pride flowing through my veins. And
we didn't come that way.
So on the tour guide, and it was just this particular tour guide. And I'm not shitting on Ellis Island and what it meant for a lot of people and their descendants who came here. And that was the beginning point. I get it. I get why it's important for a lot of people. I did not feel a sense of relation to that. And the person that was giving the tour, he just kept saying the word struggle and the boat ride and the struggle of the journey was treacherous. And they got here to Ellis Island. And look, I'm not here to get into struggle Olympics, motherfucker. And, you know, they boat ride. At least they wasn't rowing. Like, there's a lot of shit I could have heckled them with.
Yeah, their boat ride wasn't a choice. I'm just saying.
It was, to me, he was really leaning into how treacherous. And as it's relative, I'm not here to shit on nobody's fucking ancestors' journey. But for me and what I know the transatlantic journey was, it wasn't this. And I'm seeing pictures and it's just folks packed on a boat. Yeah, you ain't got no seat. It's a little fucked up. Crowded.
Right, but you still got on nice outfits, you know what I'm saying? They still look dressed nice, and at the time, you know, you put on your best to go across the Atlantic Ocean.
Was over struggling. The adjectives was a little too struggly. And okay. I don't know why, but I just didn't enjoy it. And I took my headset off and I'll walk around and look at this shit and take it in on my own accord. I don't need you adding the extra. And I was in the Ellis Island. I was in that museum probably 20. It's an hour 90. It's a proper
spot. Tour. Yeah.
Nah. I did 20 minutes. I was outside eating a hot dog, waiting at the ferry for my girl and the boy.
Yeah. And my kids went and took off the headsets like about 15 minutes in. I'm like, Dad, can we just walk around and read the things? I was like, yeah, let's walk and read the things. That's a way better idea. Let's just read the things and walk the hell around. And I walked out of the Holocaust tour, the Holocaust Museum tour in D.C. first time, because they get you to a point where you follow the life of a person. They give you a card. And every step, every station that you go to, you have to hit the card to see whether or not your person survived. And my person, we walk and there's this room you walk into and it's pitch black dark, but it smells like rubber. And I put my little thing down and the whole room lights up and all you see are the shoes. And they tell you that this is all that was left in the gas chamber after, you know, somebody went through was just the shoes. And I looked down at my little thing and my dude died. I left my car right there, walked right the hell out. It was still a good half hour left. I was like, I can't take it. It's too much. Could you imagine if you went to the Black People Museum and they gave you a card of a black person and you had to track that all the way through the museum to see how far you could make it? Like, oof. It is honestly, digitally and like sensory wise, it is easily one of the dopest museums you will ever go to. But I'm going to tell you, they let you, you feel what the experience was like by the time you leave. No question about it. It was a lot. It was heavy.
It's by far, to me, museums still remain to be the most immersive form of education, even more so than teaching.
Yes.
And classes, you know, some of these VR headset experiences are coming close to that. And that's why, you know, I still have a lot of faith in the kids when it comes to CRT and getting history out of the, what you going to do, get rid of the museum too, ho? You can't.
Motherfuckers
gonna go to the museum. It's time now for
Cody's most outstanding employee of the week.
I understand we got some feedback from the Native American brother, right?
We did. It's Jody.
Okay.
I don't know why I say it like that.
Okay. What's Jody talking about in the email? Jody is the one who...
his email said...
RoyceJobFair@gmail.com if y'all want to check us and tell us we ain't shit like Jody did last week. Jody.
Wait a minute.
Reached out and told us we wasn't working.
Jody didn't tell us we were trash.
He said we're trash-ass.
Trash.
Because we got to recognize.
He said we could do better.
Yeah. And that's fair. So then what did he say? What did he say in his email? What's in his email?
He said, job fair. Thanks for the shout out today, guys. It made my day. Roy, if you ever do a Native show and need help with Native theme music, there's some good Native hip hop artists such as Steen Joey. Check out his song on the FX show, Reservation Dogs. Mm-hmm. It's hilarious and pretty accurate. And then he sent you a link.
Dopeness. Yo, what time did that email come in? Did it say like early?
Oh, I clicked
up. I think it came in at like 9-something our time.
Jeez, the show goes live at what, 5 a.m.?
3 a.m. So that means that he was up early here in the joint. Like, I appreciate that, homie. I appreciate that.
The show before we did.
Yeah, basically.
He heard the show before we heard the show.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, damn, Jody.
Can
we still can't say where he's a professor, right? Do we know what he teaches?
No.
What do we know about Jody?
We know that he's an associate professor at a major university, and that means he's on track for tenure, possibly. Because you go from associate, then you go to professor, blah, 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 blah.
Okay. All right.
And I know that he's not on social media. That's why he emailed me on places where teachers go to vent about their students.
Wait, what's that site like?
There's a magic site where teachers go to vent about their
students? Oh my gosh, it's wild.
Y'all got like a Reddit for teachers? Y'all just talking shit like a digital teachers lounge?
Let me find out.
You
got a black planet for teachers.
You do not want to be in there.
Oh, that's what's up.
They are wild.
Yes, I do.
You know the chat rooms are OC and that shit.
Oh, fuck. I'm with it. Well, nonetheless, Jody.
Hi, Jody.
For working hard and teaching them goddamn kids and then talking shit about them behind their back.
Oh my gosh.
And then turning right back around and teaching them kids again, which means you really don't mean half the shit you be talking when you should talk to them kids. For that, Jody, you are
Cody's most outstanding employee of the week.
Brought to you by Sackleston State Community College.
Respect.
Worst and first time. Now, there is a... I have mixed feelings about Black History Museums. And one of my famed bits from Roy Wood Jr. Father Figure 2017, available streaming now on Paramount Plus, where I talked about, you know, let me pose this question to both of y'all. JG, third, Would you rather get a tour of a civil rights museum from a black employee or a white employee?
That's a real question.
Real question. I pose this question.
On the special.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
A white museum guest should have a white tour guide.
Yeah.
Why?
I agree. And a black person should, because if not, you end up asking uncomfortable, weird ass questions and shit. That's the way I look at it.
Why are you segregating them?
I'm not segregating them, first of all.
Yes, you are.
Protecting them.
How?
No, I'm not. Let me explain. Because if you're a black person and you're a tour guide at a black history museum, there is a lot of bad news up and down them hallways. Mm. You might have a little positive corridor with Obama and Kobe and Oprah and the brother who invented the super soaker. But most of that black history museum is going to be some mean and evil and fucked up shit. Do you want your white guests at 4:30 in the evening with this brother who ain't done nothing but stand and struggle for 8 hours? Is that who you want talking to the white folks?
Yes.
They ain't going to never come back.
Yes, I do.
No.
Yes, okay. Why?
No. No. She's going to cuss him out.
Are you telling me this is why I didn't get the job at the Smithsonian?
Oh, my God.
Is this why? Because like you shouldn't quote Francis Crest Wilson when you're talking to white people about things? Is that what you're saying?
Docents are professionals.
Francis Crest Wilson's God. That's all I'm saying, B. They don't want to hear me. But go ahead. I'm sorry. Maybe
the thing that I have loved that's been happening in this country, I'd say probably the last 5 to 10 years, is that we are finally taking time to properly recognize a lot of places that are not just black, but also indigenous, in that these places are sacred. These places are important. I'm talking about you, late Lanier. Drain the motherfucker.
Yes.
Who else? We going to keep snatching all of you motherfuckers down under the water.
Oh, Roy Wood Jr.
In the water. Yes.
I know that's a separate conversation, but I really do love, you know, this podcast. I've said it a million times over. This podcast is about learning about those jobs that you just, you know, you knew had to be a job, but you didn't, like, oh yeah, somebody does have to plan black monuments and protect black land. Who is that person? JG, who do we have on the line?
We have Dr. Joycelyn Imani, and she serves as the National Director of Black History and Culture at the Trust for Public Lands. In her role, she's focused on protecting and preserving sites related to the Black experience in America. She essentially helps create Black parks, and she'll be talking with you today about the importance and the impact of her role within Black communities in America, as well as job openings in her department. Hello, Dr. Imani.
Oh,
fire.
Hey, and y'all call me Jocelyn.
It's you Jocelyn. Sure?
Jocelyn.
Oh, hi.
I can't call you Doc.
I mean, you can.
You come bearing jobs, and we appreciate that.
I do come bearing jobs.
How did you get into this role? I have a million questions, but first and foremost, how did you get to where you are? Because you have to already give a damn about history. I know Booker Hayat, she had put something in here about you. You taught U.S. history at Fisk and Howard University, respectfully.
You?
Shut up. I knew you was about to say.
What? I can't shut up.
Appreciation for fam. I love Morehouse. Right.
That's fine.
No, I am a bulldog and a bison.
Okay.
Fair enough. H-U-U-N. I take it back. How do you get into the job of basically deciding, hey, this right here, this little piece of land, yeah, we're going to make this a little spot where we're going to remember some things.
Mm. Yeah. Well, the short answer is God. But the real, the other answer is that I was surfing on LinkedIn one day and I happened to see this job description. And I was like, oh, here's all these things that I do. Because oftentimes the profession of history, I have a PhD in history. Most PhDs go tenure track, go academia. I didn't do that. I went public history. So then I went to Park Service, National Park Service. I went to the Smithsonian. I've had my own consulting firm just doing ad hoc, random public history projects. I've taught on the collegiate level as an adjunct and a lecturer. And I'm also a musician sometimes. So all of these various things about myself, I had lived separately. And when I saw the job description for my current position, it was all woven in together. And I was like, ooh, this will be fun. So I happened to apply. But I got into history in undergrad. I actually came to Fisk and I was going to major in business. And my mother is a Fisk Jubilee singer.
Okay, now.
I heard somebody presentation on Fisk Jubilee singers. And I had grown up with this story. I thought I knew everything. And I didn't. It was, you know, 85% of the presentation was brand new. So I remember leaving that presentation and I had a thought that wasn't my own. And I was like, change your major to history. So I did. And I called my mom excited, you know, freshman week. Mom, so excited. Change my major to history. She's like, I don't know what you're going to do with that, but all right.
And I love it.
And then graduating, every door away from Howard University closed and every door toward Howard University open. I honestly, you know, bless that version of me because I had no idea what I was getting into. Mm-hmm. But I just found myself there and I've just been following piece by piece by piece with faith and hard work. And God has been
good. That's fire, Queen.
Now, some of those pieces led you to work with the National Park Service for a little bit and the Ulysses S. Grant National Historic Site for a little bit. And then you was over there at the Office of Curatorial Affairs at the Smithsonian Institute for a little bit. Now, what is the process, you know, and Booker Hayat was able to dig up some stuff here and down South Georgia girl as well. Hey, I did not know this.
Yeah. What's a curator's office? She ain't say, I need to know. I like big words and everything, but yeah, what is that?
You pick the stuff.
What?
You're curatorial. You know, you pick the stuff. Yeah, you pick the stuff that goes in the museum. I'm just guessing.
Yes. That's where the curators, the museum specialists, the curatorial assistants, all the people who research
and
do that, all that work in there.
Okay. So quick off ramp on that.
Mm. Yes.
How do you decide what's good enough to go in the museum versus going to the museum? Get that shit.
Right.
Well, it depends on the museum's collection. So at the National Museum of African American History and Culture, one of the easiest determinants was, does this tell a national story versus does it tell a regional story or a local story? In which case, if it doesn't meet that criteria, we refer it to some of our other friends. And I'm a member of the Association of African American Museums, which is hundreds of museums around the country. And so we wanted to make sure that other museum collections were being enhanced as well. There's also the question of integrity. Is the object in good condition? Will it require a lot of upkeep? Is it, you know, is there clear provenance?
Special light. Special
Yeah. Do you know where it came from? So something like, for example, a red piece of paper would not necessarily be great because red as a color deteriorates fastest in light. Or something like a feather boa. Fur requires a lot of upkeep. So it would have to be somebody's, you know, the question is, does the value of this acquisition drain the resources of the institution long term?
I'm thinking about the First Lady's collection of gowns. Because, you know, the temperature in that particular area of the museum is out of control because there are so many pieces of furs. There's diamonds. Yeah. There are pearls. And that's what that made me think of. I apologize, Roy, but I have so many questions.
Wait, so they have the climate. So you have to think about the climate in that part of the museum versus another part of the museum. Is it hotter or colder when we're dealing with clothing and like civil rights suits and stuff?
So let me not even get out of my bag because I'm not a conservator, but I would think it's a little colder. That's a whole other job. The conservators and the people who deal with collections management is a whole separate job. Easiest way to think about it, conservators are the producers, curators are the
artists. I love that. And we run.
How do they preserve the diaper from my man from Parliament? That's what I need to know. I know so you can't answer that right now.
Was that Bootsy Collins? Or was it?
I forget his name right now. But yeah, he wore a diaper, and the diaper is in the Smithsonian. Wow. I think that's crazy.
And let me just note, First Ladies is in American history. Yes. The Parliament stuff is in African American history. They're across the street from each
Facts.
Other.
Where do you all get all of this stuff from? Like, so if we're going to, if you go, all right, so real quick, back to the stat that Hayat and Rhonda found, 100,000 sites in this country are part of the National Register, but only 2% of those sites tell Black stories. So you all decide, hey, we're going to build a thing and we need to put things inside of this thing. Who is sending the stuff that you in turn yay or nay or reject as a conservator?
So oftentimes those are two different sides of the game. The historic sites and the sites that are on the register are often managed by National Park Service, by independent nonprofits. Those are places versus artifacts and things like that often go into museums. Thus, there are some collections. Like, I also used to work at Frederick Douglass's house in Anacostia.
Shout out.
Yeah, it's a beautiful site. Gorgeous. It's a beautiful site. House. 80% of those objects are inside, 80% of the things that are in that are original to that house. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times historic sites that have artifacts in them, they're original to that house. They don't necessarily go and put them in the house because houses and sites aren't as climate controlled as your museum.
That's crazy though.
But to your question about like sourcing collections, it is anything from just relationships, asking people questions. And yes, I see the note that 70 degrees Fahrenheit plus or minus 4 degrees is generally the standard.
Thank you.
There's also, I don't want to get to lying. Mm-hmm. It's a humidity percentage. I want to say it needs to be between 50 and 60% okay. humidity, but don't give me the lying. If it's too mm-hmm. low humidity, there we go. 45% relative humidity. Plus or minus 8%.
Rhonda on some meteorologist shit today. Look at Rhonda.
Rhonda runs the world.
This is why I clarified, like, facts. I clarified that I'm a historian that does, yes. like, the curatorial side. I travel in conservation at Ulysses Grant National Historic Site, but that's so far out of my depth because that really is, like, knowing I had to learn the new software for the PIM monitors and how do you clean moldy book collection and all these other questions that I actually didn't do. Mm-hmm. It goes on and on and on. But just a note on relative humidity, if it's too low humidity, it's brittle and things can break. And if it's too high, mold grows.
We run in the same circles. I'm a conservationist. I used to work for the Nature Conservancy, a global conservation organization. So yes, when I saw the trust report, we know all the same people.
Yeah, because all the brown absolutely. Folks in the green space.
Oh, okay, I'm going to stop because I have another question. But go ahead, Roy. I have like four questions.
Job fair, we'll be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Job fair. We are speaking with Dr. Jocelyn about the world of museum curation and creating these wonderful, wonderful facilities where Black stories can be told. And not just that, but, you know, we need to talk to her a little bit about these state parks and all this open air space where she's worked as well. Like, it's just so much to learn from her. But first, take a little break from talking about that occupation to speak with a man who, I don't know if you knew this or not, JG, he has had sex in 4 natural history museums across this country.
Right.
Respect.
He is the author of the New York Times best-selling book, How to Recycle Gifts from Your Last Side Chick for Your New Side Chick.
Oh my gosh.
Amazon bestseller.
Yeah, it's a bestseller. His mama named him Narado. We call him Rod for short. Rod, are you a museum person?
Oh, yeah. I love history and I love art. And so museums are just a perfect combination of both those things. Yeah, I'm very big into museums, man.
Nice.
I don't mind them. We were talking a little earlier about the Holocaust museums and how it's a tragedy that's just so unimaginable that me going in to voluntarily download all of that at one time is it like even the African American History Museum in DC, like I've only gone to three floors. I haven't done that museum in its entire. I've been twice and it's just it's just so much stuff.
I've seen enough black trauma. I'm good on the museum. I don't need to see the fucking museum.
And there's been a couple of movies and films about the Holocaust. And we were shown a lot of that stuff in school as well. Schindler's List and the like. So you've learned, I've learned about it. But then to go in and get the granular details, yeah, it can definitely be a lot. We bring Rod on this program to give you topics to break the ice with coworkers you can't stand. It's about that time of year where, you know, you gotta get ready for these shitty holiday parties. And,
bro, what did Christmas do to you?
I know, right?
I don't see nobody that hates Christmas parties since this side of the goddamn Grinch. You have not said a positive word about Christmas parties.
Whole time.
Because they're just a setup for you to lose your job.
Ever since you took the female Huey P. Newton to that damn cast party, you have been anti-coworker gathering so fucking hard.
Low key, I was nervous about JG rolling with me to the Emmys.
Why?
Because I don't know. I'm too traumatized. How do I know that I bring you to the party and then you don't hug white people either?
Now that first party, some of those hugs were a little weird. I was like, wait a minute, your hands, watch your hands. Hey, Rod, Terry, who is a listener, he has a new job and he wanted you to know. And he's now working for the fastest growing online used car dealer. And he wanted you to know that your segment helps him.
Shout out to Terry.
Is that Terry down in Montgomery?
No, that's Terry that Rod met. Where were you, Rod? You were performing somewhere.
I was in Macon. Yeah. Shout out to Terry.
Oh, yeah. He brought the son with him or whatever.
Yeah,
well, he has a new job. Fastest growing online used car dealer in the United States. We are not allowed to say their name, but he works with them now. So congratulations, Terry.
Keep on climbing, Terry. That's dope.
That's what's up.
Turn it over to you, Rod, as you always do.
Well, the black community would probably be very interested in this story. It was a pretty big story recently. You know, when IMG Academy, the sports high school conglomerate, that got into that scandal with Bishop Sycamore, the fake high school out of Ohio.
Oh.
Yeah, we talked about the bunch of 25-year-old men pretending to be high school students.
Well, it has happened to IMG Academy again.
What?
They really?
They recently put a beat down on West Toronto Prep out of Canada that was so vicious they forfeited the game at halftime as it was 96-0.
Damn! At halftime,
it was 96-0 and they was like, all right, this game over.
Wow.
How does that even happen?
Oh, man.
How the hell do you get 96-0? Like, what were the stats? How does that happen?
And the highlights are just as awful as they were against Bishop Sycamore. Those guys from West Toronto Prep look like a bunch of six-year-olds that had never heard of football in their life.
So, see, at this point, now you can't feel sorry for IMG because now you're just playing whoever you want to play so you can get on TV and showcase your recruits. All right, Rod, flip it up for the folks here real quick.
On the other side, white people might be super interested in this one. TSA agents at an airport in South Florida recently found a gun hidden inside of a raw turkey coming through the airport.
What?
And I do not understand who they thought they were fooling with that one. First of all, a cooked or raw turkey being brought through the airport is wildly suspicious.
Yes.
Like, what?
Wildly
what Beavis and Butthead ass person was like, I had this motherfucking turkey, they won't see it. It's like, it's an x-ray machine. They're looking for bombs. They gonna notice a fucking 9mm stuffed inside the damn turkey.
Why?
Yeah, no, it wasn't in foil. It was in a plastic bag. I guess they're making those out of lead these days.
They couldn't even do that part right.
Turkey put the gun in his teepee hole.
They wrapped a gun in a plastic bag and stuffed it inside an uncooked turkey and then brought it through the damn airport. And that's just insane, man.
Damn.
Why, like,
no words.
Have we had a TSA agent on yet? We haven't had a TSA agent.
No,
I know a lot of former TSA agents.
We should, because the shit they find is wild. People do that kind of crazy shit. I just read a story the other day about a dude who went and pawned a chainsaw that he had just used to chop up his roommate. It still had flesh and blood on it.
Rod, no.
Just like, no. Bro, you don't think they gonna call the cops on this one? Yeah, nigga didn't even put that motherfucker in the shower or nothing. Just
that would have been perfect for the dead, for the God Bless the Dead episode right there. That's
how much you'll give me for this one? I don't know, probably about 15 to life, motherfucker.
Oh my gosh. I have a sidebar when possible. I got a sidebar.
File.
So I decided to clean under the sink and I found some show and tell for the relationship there, some wedding ring stuff.
You found one of your engagement rings under the
sink? I found three.
Sink. Under the sink?
Yeah.
Three engagement rings.
Three under the sink? Sink.
Yeah.
What a piece of shit.
I kept them in this little thing right here.
What a terrible
I can't
person.
Think of a more I don't give a fuck this about so this pretty. The largest gesture of love known to man than I put my engagement rings under the sink next under to the Drano.
Freaking Brillo pads.
I'm going to break this one down into a pair of earrings.
What's
that's
under these rubber gloves? Oh, three engagement rings.
They were in this little thing. Jeez.
They look like that's where you used to keep your crack at. The stash box.
Get some diamond earrings in here that were a gift and some other stuff. I just throw them in this little thing and put
you
it in the sink.
You get about 20
why
rocks
do you have
in
these
that lava?
Trinkets like a fucking, but like a serial killer. Like you're just collecting.
Yeah, that looked like
gums and shit.
Is that the chicken? Is that the chicken dudes? Is that one of the chicken dudes?
Oh, no, the chicken dudes. That's this one. It was so pretty. But I'll talk about that thing. I found it under the sink.
No words. I'm good.
If you decide to fly with them, don't put them in a turkey. That's not a good stash spot.
His mama named him Rotto. We call him Rob for short. Rod, podcast is Uncle Rod's Story Corner. You can get it wherever you download audio legally. Rod, we bid you adieu, brother.
Thank you, Rod.
Yeah, bless up.
I can't wait for this relationship fair, man. Y'all got the, if you got some relationship drama at your job, you need to call us. Email the show.
Why us?
This one. This is going to be a good one. They don't need to talk to you because the way you treat people.
That is not true. I am the nicest person to guys that I date when I date.
Ask one of the motherfuckers who ring you kept. Ask him if you know.
Talk to that ring that's been hiding in the dark under your sink.
Whatever. I need to get this made into some earrings.
Rings. I'm a nice person. Rings, ain't I? I'm glad I take you out once a year to talk to all three of y'all. I'm going to put y'all back down with
the all these women that would go to the end of the earth for one engagement ring, and she got three of them under her damn sink.
As I said, Roy, I don't need any help.
Jacqueline don't need no middleman, but she does need a jewelry box. Fellas, Christmas is coming
up. I need a jewelry box.
with that.
I need a jewelry box. That's true.
Let's get back to Dr. Jocelyn. Scam of the week time. There are so many untold Black stories.
Yeah.
How do you decide which one to tell next?
So I'm glad you asked. That's why they hired me, is to help lead that strategy.
That's fine.
So for me, one of the number one criteria that I have is self-determination. Are Black people driving the car in this story? Because one of my huge pet peeves, when you go to some historic sites, you learn about the white supremacist domestic terrorism that Black people have had to like survive through. And it's like, oh, and at the end, and Black people got the Voting Rights Act, or, oh, and at the end, Black people got free, but you sat through 45 minutes of debasement and dehumanization. So for me, I've been really intentional in reframing the stories we already have and preserving the stories we're about to protect, in making sure that it's Black people having agency for themselves and having self-determination. So that's number one. National stories. With the Trust for Public Land, there's a lot, we have expertise in real estate and we deal with like research. We're also trying to put a park within 10 minutes of every American. So there's all these other factors that our ParkServe and ParkScore tools help us identify, like, is it in a heat island? Does it need tree canopies? All these other things, on and on and on.
That's what's up. When you go back to DC and you go to Frederick Douglass' house, yo, I need you to just go in there and redo that entire intro movie. Like, that shit's been there from like,
that is actually underway.
Yo, please, thank God. Oh, thank you.
Oh, you're talking about the intro movie that like all the Black museums have. Sit down here and learn all the struggle before you see the exhibits.
They used to have to take students to Frederick Douglass' house. And part of taking the students there is you got to watch this movie about Frederick Douglass. But it was done in like the late 60s, early 70s. So all the graphics are bad. It does not stand the test of time. There's like white people talking to Black folks in the film, hella crazy. And Frederick Douglass looked hella crazy. And your kid and the kids from the school will always make fun of you when you come to the joint. Hey, man, why you guys learn about this dude, man? Like, for real, look at this. Why were you talking about this?
So let me say, and this is why it's important for more people of color and more people to have a nuanced understanding of our history to get in these positions. Because I know, not because it's, you know, I hope I don't get in trouble for saying this, but I know that that is being redone. Word. I want to just shout out to the superintendent. It's an amazing Black woman named Tom Wilson, who has been at National Capitol Park. Sees Frederick Douglass is one of a group of parks, National Capitol Park sees. It includes Anacostia, Carter G. Woodson, Mayor McLeod Bethune, Fort DuPont, Kenilworth, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes. Talk about it.
She's actually redoing that. So that's being done. Dope. I don't work Park Service anymore, so I don't know when it's coming.
Oh, that is wonderful.
That's what's up. I'm good. I ain't got no more questions.
It's more than a friend of mine. Yep. Again,
I promise you, we know all the same people. I promise.
I'm sure we do.
Jacqueline, I've not seen you this excited in a long time.
Because what she does is preserving our history and telling our stories. And she's unearthing the real stories. They've put someone in place who's not going to greenwash it, who's not going to whitewash it, and who is going to get to the bottom of it. And that makes me so happy. I love what you do. I simply love what you do.
Thank you, sister. Thank you.
Absolutely. Because you know they want us to greenwash and whitewash, but that's a whole nother issue.
Yeah. But I mean, like, you know, I grew up in church and they say, you know, the truth will make you free. Come on. You shall know the truth and the truth will make you free. And so I've been really blessed to have a career that's just telling the truth.
Absolutely.
And I I'm a Southern woman. I actually don't want anybody to feel bad. I just tell you the truth and we can work through it together.
Absolutely. Well, I was just going to say, this is adjacent to the work that you do. Number one, I want your thoughts, your opinions, or whatever you're thinking as Lizzo was actually playing the flutes of...
Oh, the slavery flute.
I wanted to be like, did we not learn from Kim Kardashian? Stop playing collections. Stop taking collections out of the... I really did love it.
Okay.
But
for the people who don't know, let's just recap the story for the people who don't know so they can follow us. A while back, Lizzo was playing a concert in Washington, D.C., and apparently James Madison had a flute that was like 200 years old and like stored away in wherever you put flutes. And they was like, Lizzo, you play
in the Library of Congress. Like, mm-hmm.
Yeah, which just like, hey, get that flute from down the hallway and give it to Lizzo. And Lizzo played the slavery flute. I thought she was going to fuck up and summon some slave masters. That's why I was scared.
The slavery flute. Ah, I'm mad at you.
She played a slavery flute. Don't you play that slavery flute in them goddamn. I've seen Ghostbusters. I know what happened.
The slavery flute.
The cloud opened up. So, yeah, but go ahead.
And the thing that I reference is Kim Kardashian took Marilyn Monroe's dress out of
the original dress
and wore it to the Met Gala and busted it out. The damage that can come from people improperly using collections is irreversible. These things are irreplaceable. So I was like, why are we doing this again? However, Carla Hayden, who is the Black woman that runs the Library of Congress, offered to Lizzo personally on Twitter. So once I saw it, I was like, well, that ain't my circus. Not my circus, not my monkeys. Let me fall back in my lane.
But just because it's a Black person at the helm don't mean it's a good decision.
That is not something I am qualified to say.
Good answer. Great answer. Wow, good.
I thought about the cleaning because I used to play the flute.
Me too.
I play the flute. With. Yeah, I played flute enough to know spit get on down through there. Playing the flute, spit get on down through there. So then that means the conservators have to undo the flute, clean it, and with something that old, that's what I say, conservation is a whole science unto itself.
That's 200-year-old spit. That's 200-year-old spit in there. That nasty. Did they clean that before they put that up? Like, did they at least put some hand sanitizer on it before Lizzo played it? That 200-year-old slavery
spit. That even goes into the chemistry of conservation because
slavery spit.
Certain materials that are old and have aged in certain ways require special cleaning products, et cetera, et cetera. That's not my lane, but that's what I thought about is like them poor conservators.
And there's no way that metal was treated the same way that metal is now. I forget the process where you drop the metal in like electrified water.
But that shit clear. Ain't it made of crystal?
It was made of crystal. Yeah.
So if somebody was drooling in there and it dried, you could see that.
I will still
this 200-year-old slavery spit. Man.
When you bring them in, you do assess them, clean them, treat them. So if there was some dried up spit, they probably already got doctor. That. It would just be
right, okay. Wait a minute.
It's slavery spit. They need to check the DNA for the slave that played that flute. I'm sorry.
When I worked at the Nature Conservancy, I made good money. What does it look like over at the trust? Talk about it.
God has blessed me. I would not have.
Oh yes.
I would not have left my good government job if the numbers weren't talking right.
Yes, yes, yes.
But, you know, it varies. And I will say our leadership, our CEO, Diane Regas, has been a woman who has been very intentional about making sure that pay raises are adequate because the money ain't the same
Come on.
For everybody across the organization. I sit in a national seat. I'm a, you know, director on a national level. That's not necessarily going to be the same pay as a field associate, project associate somewhere. So that has been a conversation. We just had our staff retreat in the Rocky Mountains a couple weeks ago. And that was a conversation to make sure that the pay is equitable for everyone. Because to be real honest, in this field, not just the green field, but in my career, there have been a lot of there's a lot of prohibitive barriers if you are not rich to get into this field.
So
like me and my brand new PhD, just because of like circumstances, ended up right down to the unemployment office on Minnesota Avenue when I first. It's right real. Now. And even for my postdoc at Smithsonian, I can say it now because it's past, but I did not make a living wage. I just took a gamble on myself in Washington, D.C., because I knew that the knowledge that I would get from being there was worth the experience. But if I didn't have faith in community, I might not be where I am, to be real honest. And now it's finally starting to pay off.
I hear you, sis.
Last thing from me, Roy, I promise you, because I could go on and on here. I just want you to reiterate that these jobs are there. They do pay well. These industries are trying to bring the money up to the level if they don't already. And then also, when you travel around, because I covered the Southeast for that global conservation organization, baby, I saw everything. So I got paid well and I traveled well, but I got to tell our story. So will you please tell more people to come into these organizations?
So after the break, we're going to get into exactly that. Yes. Let's talk about those jobs because we need to know what's going on.
Yes.
So you can get a job and stop people from playing slavery flutes. You could summon the wrong slave. I'm telling them, that portal open up, them slave masters come through, and then we got to fucking have an intergalactic battle.
Worse than that. Or you be sitting there playing the slavery flute, and all the black people just get up and start cleaning shit and walk out. You know what I'm saying? All kind of bad things happen to slavery. Yeah.
Man, y'all playing with fire, man. Y'all better leave them old instruments alone. It's a job fair. We'll be right back.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Job fair, rounding third, headed for home. We are talking with Dr. Jocelyn Imani, the National Director of Black History and Culture. Yeah. Working in these museums, deciding what to put in the museums, deciding where to put a museum, and deciding what does and doesn't belong in the museum. It is a thankless job as you do the best you can to create these tangible places for black people to go and get angry at white folks.
Oh. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not the purpose.
I mean, the side effect, it might not be the purpose, but it is one of the many side effects as a black person.
Totally what does happen.
Going to some of these fine establishments that you have curated.
Just walk out side-eyeing all kind of white people, but I'm just saying.
Well, I hope that you leave these places feeling inspired and proud. Because we have ancestors, we come from some powerful people, man. Mm-hmm. And when you think about whether it's your direct ancestors or your communal ancestors, the paths that have been made, the ways that have been set forth. For me, when I visit history sites, whether it's a historic site, a place, or a museum, oftentimes I'm just amazed at the resilience and I'm inspired to keep on going. Mm.
Mm-hmm. We also talked before we came on air about something. I cannot go into certain museums because there is a block there.
Synesthesia. That's what we were talking about. Synesthesia.
Thank you. Can you explain that more, Dr. Imani?
What do you mean? Yeah. What is that?
Yeah. So like I was telling them that there are certain places where the story is so heavy that oftentimes it's very difficult to go. And I told them about when I worked at Smithsonian, I couldn't go into the Emmett Till section at first. I had to go, and I won't tell that other story on air, but I had to brace myself.
Yes.
What I would say in terms of folks that find the stories too heavy to engage with, I think prayer is very helpful. Mm-hmm. Also libations. I'll tell you, when I worked at Grand Canyon, I learned about all of the native tribes that have been marched out of there and removed. And I don't know if I should say this or not, but about 20 to 30 people die every year at the Grand Canyon.
Yep.
And for me, with my background, I was like, ooh, those are angry spirits. So let me go ahead. One day at the beginning of my tenure, I went at dusk to the edge of the rim of the canyon and I just poured libation. And I asked for safe passage for those spirits and I asked them to guide me and to help me do this. We're absolutely
there ain't nothing wrong with doing that, man. That's what you're supposed to do. That's the way I was raised up. That's what you're supposed to do. Like,
yeah, this work is very, very spiritual. For me, at least. I can't speak to some of my colleagues. Absolutely.
I went to Montgomery to the Legacy Museum and the Equal Justice Initiative and what they have set up. A lot of people affectionately call it the Lynching Memorial, where, you know, there's dirt there's dirt from the soil of every recorded lynching in the history of our country, all there in one place. And each little jar of dirt represents a dead Black person.
Yes.
And it was a lot.
It's heavy. That one,
and I'm glad I went at like 11 o'clock in the morning, so I had the rest of the day to kind of come down. Mm-hmm. I couldn't imagine going to something like that at 5:30 having dinner and good night. I was like, no. That, a lot of these museums, low key, Dr. Jocelyn, y'all need to put a Pixar movie at the exit.
Some little happy representation of slavery would be all right.
Yes, I know you've taken in a lot. Here's Toy Story 2.
To wash it on off.
Help you get back to zero.
Well, that's why some museums, and this is even going back to the work of the Trust for Public Lands, that's why a lot of spaces have started crafting landscape to allow for memorial space for whether they have a water feature in the land or just some green space. A lot, that's been a move across the field at a lot of institutions. Now, again, although there's an Association of African American Museums, they're not like all one museum. Yeah. They're individual folks that are deciding this on their own as their individual budgets can fit. But that's been a move because that's something that is happening, particularly as we get to younger and younger generations who are removed from this history. Mm-hmm. And when they're brought into it, it's very heavy. So, you know, some of the work, some of the things that Trust for Public Land has done, we did the Philando Castile Memorial.
Really?
Yeah. And those are spaces, even in terms of going back to that point of self-determination and how we pick the spaces that we do. It's about, like, I've told my colleagues, those are not sites where we're championing the story of state-sponsored violence of Black men. Those are sites where we are championing the story of resilience and self-determination of communities to preserve those narratives and champion them high. So that shift in perspective and that utilizing the land to heal is important.
Thank you. Shit.
This has been a wonderful conversation. Yes. I don't even have time, unfortunately, to get into you with the conversation about CRT and Black history and whether or not you're dealing with a lot of backlash at the state and government level.
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Quick answer. Thank you. Tell us a little bit about the positions that you're hiring for. I know some of it's in office and I know some of it is remote, but I would love for people to know ways that they could integrate themselves into your world.
So the Trust for Public Land is always hiring a bevy of careers. So right now I went to our website, which is tpl.org, is in trustforpublicland.org/careers. And just right now, there's a prospect development senior analyst that's remote, philanthropy associate, philanthropy, marketing, program managers, state directors, trails, I mean, legal counsel.
Wow.
There's a whole bunch of jobs. And that's just page one of I don't know how many.
Call Vanessa Martin for that marketing job. But go ahead.
Yes, Vanessa Martin. You know,
baby, we in the same circles. You think I'm playing.
Vanessa is an amazing colleague, and she will appreciate this.
She came from the Nature Conservancy.
These jobs, which again, and not just at the Trust for Public Land, within this field of doing Black history, there are marketing people that when we close a land deal, I'll just speak to the Trust for Public Land, although this exists in other entities. When we close a land deal, somebody has to publicize it. Somebody has to do the research on those real estate assets. Somebody has to raise the money to do it. And there's all these levels of philanthropy jobs. There are back-end jobs because we have to have accountants and finance folks. There's on and on and on and on and on, a bunch of different jobs. I got my start in the National Park Service, which people say there's a job for everybody in the Park Service. But the same for the Trust for Public Land, same for Smithsonian. On and on and on. But our website is tpl.org/careers.
No idea it was this complicated. Thank you.
Yeah.
No idea. Like, that's mind blowing. That's staggering.
The Nature Conservancy also taught me how to raise multiple millions of dollars so that although I was in marketing, we had to go into the philanthropy aspect as well. So don't just go into these jobs just single focused on what you're supposed to do. Get into those other departments. You got to have seven touches to raise multiple millions of dollars. Come on, girl.
Absolutely. Shout out to Anna Barber and Associates because that's a Black woman who owns her own philanthropy.
Yes!
That's how I learned that.
Thank you.
Well, I can't thank you enough. And when the time comes, Dr. Jocelyn Imani, and it's time to break ground in the Birmingham Civil Rights District on the Roy Wood Jr. Historical Batting Cages and Radio History Museum.
Okay.
I will reach out to you.
Nice.
That's what I'm, when I'm dead and gone, I want y'all to have civil rights batting cages. And talk about black journalists. That's yes, I like baseball. That's what I want. This is my museum. Oh. Build your own fucking museum with what you want in it.
I'm going to build your museum. So I just want to make sure.
Put a batting cage in it.
Got
put
it.
A batting cage in it. And on the other side, a bunch of Stuart Scott exhibits and my daddy.
Yeah, shout out to your daddy.
Okay, I got it.
Shout out to Bernard Shaw and Fred Hickman or something like that.
I got it.
But thank you so much for coming
thank
on the
you.
Job.
Thank you always for repping FAMU. Thank you for representing your alma mater. I appreciate you.
I try my best.
Heard the same for Morehouse.
Appreciate you,
but I appreciate y'all.
Thank you so much for coming on. Right. Appreciate you, Doctor.
JG, I'm gonna find you on.
Oh,
LinkedIn.
Girl, we know all the same people.
Mm-hmm. Y'all.
All right.
That's the show. Royce Jotfair is a product of iHeartMedia, Comedy Central, and South Park and Princeton Productions. Learned a lot today. I gotta start thinking about the stuff that I'm gonna put in the museum.
That's gonna be nice. You know?
I still got my Nikes from my second comedy special.
Oh, yeah.
What's the humidity for them? Put them at 42% humidity at 70 degrees or whatever the fuck.
What kind of socks did you wear with those shoes?
I don't know, but you don't want them in the museum.
You don't want those in the museum. I think about things we didn't want in the museum, like the first pair of used drawers for the show.
Oh, my Lord.
But it's historical.
And we're going to end right there. No, it's not.
No, it's not.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
The hit movie Bob Marley One Love is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Celebrate the life of an icon who inspired generations with his message of love, peace, and unity. Rated PG-13. Head to ParamountPlus.com/OneLove to try it free now.
Jon Stewart is back at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.